and a dedication to bring together all aspects of the community that's at the heart of KPFT's mission. We hope you'll join us. KPFT Houston.
You're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM.
Interview is with Dr. Christine Adams and regarding our rights to health care. So stay tuned for the interview and music on the Human Rights Show.
Welcome to the Human Rights Show. I'm Mary Newsom. I'm here with Deborah Adams. And today we're speaking with Dr. Christine Adams. She's a Houston area psychologist in private practice. Currently, she serves as a statewide secretary for healthcare for All Texas, an advocacy organization that promotes single-payer national health insurance through grassroots education and policy setting. Welcome to the show, Dr. Adams.
Thank you for having me.
Will you tell us a little bit about your group, please?
It's a group that is very diverse, people who are health professionals and regular consumers, and we're all dedicated to getting a single-payer national health care system in the United States. So we do a lot of speaking to other people about single-payer and comparing it to what we have now and the different options.
What exactly does single-payer mean?
Single-payer would be one entity that pays for all the claims. It would be the organization that would collect all the money and then pay out the claims. And so the single-payer system that we're interested in, that would be the government would collect all the money and then pay the doctors and the hospitals for the services.
So if it were a private organization, then that would be sort of against the ideals of a single-payer national health insurance?
Well, it's more the for-profit, so that right now we have many different payers, and those are the for-profit health plans, and so they have to take a cut out of each premium dollar to make the level of profit that they want to make. And so you could set it up so that you had a non-profit organization, you know, collecting the money and paying it, but in essence, it still would be one entity, and that saves you a great deal of money in administrative costs.
Can you give us a little bit of history? Tell us, how did health care get connected to people's employment?
Well, it was actually a fluke from World War II. There was a wage and price freeze during World War II, and the way that employers were able to attract new workers were that they were allowed by the government to offer them health benefits, and those health benefits would not be taxed. So it was, instead of getting $4,000 in wages that would be taxed, you got $4,000 as in a health insurance premium. And then the employer could also deduct the cost of giving you that benefit. And so that's how it started. It had nothing to do with it being a good system for health care delivery.
When it started, was it very rapidly taken on? In other words, was it very common at that time, or did it take a while for it to catch on?
Well, it started to become the predominant way that health insurance was provided in the United States. All the other Western European countries, they were decimated in World War II, and so they actually were able to start their national health care systems from scratch, because there wasn't anything left.
Did they basically just rebuild what was there already, or did they have a different model?
Well, there was a history in Germany with health insurance that was provided. Bismarck, actually, a great conservative, started Social Security, and they started national health insurance. And they actually did it as a way to preempt the power of labor unions, so that they wanted to be able to diffuse some of that power, and the way to do that was to provide health benefits. And so it was actually a way to undermine the progressives. Well, and in the United States, you had an interest in the labor unions actually wanted to have health insurance as a part of the labor negotiations, but it didn't really catch on very much. And then we went into World War II, and then we had this anomaly of the tax law that created the employer-based health insurance model. And then the reason that Johnson was able to get through Medicare is that what happened is then when people reached 65 and they retired from their jobs, they no longer had health insurance at a time where they really needed health care.
Would you like to just briefly go through a list of the things that, as you see it, and as your group sees it, and as many others might see it, that are wrong with the current health insurance system?
Well, it's not really a wellness system, so there's not enough effort put toward prevention. If you think about it from a business point of view, a for-profit company, it doesn't make economic sense for them to invest a lot in prevention, because each year employers decide which health insurance company they're going to go with. And so any money that you put in that calendar year to promote all these wellness activities and possibilities, then you don't reap the benefit of that, because the next year that employer may go with a different health insurance company. And so a real drawback to our system now is that we wait until people are sick, and then it's then you get health care if you have health insurance. So one thing is that we spend a lot of money on illnesses illnesses and diseases that, if we were able to catch them early, wouldn't be as expensive, and there would be a lot less suffering.
Can you tell us how many people today in the United States are uninsured?
Well, it's about 50 million now. It used to be 46 million, but with all of the people losing their jobs in this recent economic downturn, the estimates are that it's now at about 50 million, and they're anticipating that it'll go as high as 52 million before the end of this economic downturn.
And with a single payer, are there plans out there that you have, Cade, personally, that you think that are worthwhile? What are the details? Like, how would you see something like that implemented?
A single payer?
Yes.
There is a bill now in Congress. It's H.R. 676, Expanded and Improved Medicare for All, and it's sponsored by John Conyers, a Democrat from Michigan. And people can read more details about that if they can just put into their search engine in Google H.R. 676, and they will be able to actually find the actual bill and the explanation for it. But it gives very comprehensive benefits, including dental, mental health, nursing home, long-term care. It's very generous with the benefits. And the great thing about a single-payer system is that we do not need to raise any additional revenue to pay for it. It would involve the elimination of for-profit health plans. And all of the savings that we would get as a nation from not having so much administrative bureaucracy and taking the profit out of health care, we could pay for all of the people now who are uninsured and underinsured and still have very, very generous benefits for everyone. And most people would be paying less for that health care than what they're paying now.
Thank you. This is the first part of our interview with Dr. Christine Adams. She's a Houston area psychologist, and she serves as the statewide secretary for Healthcare for All Texas, an advocacy organization on single-payer insurance. Thanks, Christine. Stay tuned for commentary, music, and more on The Human Rights Show.
I'm always a flop at a top-notch affair. But I still got my health, so what do I care? My best friend, Alex, is a glass solitaire. But I still got my health, so what do I care? By fashion and for free, I'm never disgusted. Attending the Opry, my box would be a bust. I never shall have that Park Avenue air. But I'm in such health, why should I care? My face is my fortune, that's why I'm totally broke. My ship ain't coming, but I green wall a bit. Cause I've got my bottoms, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. I still have mine. Got no diamonds, got no wealth, I got no men, but I got my health.
Welcome back to our interview with Dr. Christine Adams. She's speaking to us as the statewide secretary for Healthcare for All Texas, an advocacy organization that promotes single-payer national health insurance. And Priscilla Savalas is here. Do you have a question, Priscilla?
Yes. Dr. Adams, could you tell us if you believe healthcare is a human right?
It is definitely a human right. There are three principles of human rights that do apply to healthcare. That healthcare should be universal, everybody should get it. It should be equitable, which means it is shared fairly by all of us. And it should be accountable, which means the government has a responsibility to make sure that people get healthcare above profits of corporations. But I would like to add that even if there are people there out there who don't believe that healthcare is a human right, it just makes economic sense to have single payer, even if you don't think it's a human right. Our group was able to get some of the budget figures from the city of Houston, and in their calculation, based on the numbers they had, if we had a national single payer healthcare system, the city of Houston would save $139 million in just the health benefits alone that they pay out for employees and retirees, and we would also save $10.4 million in workers' compensation. And we did not even try to figure out what our savings would be from not having to provide any charity care. And so even if you don't believe it's a human right, it is economically the smartest thing to do. It's a rare combination where the best moral choice is actually the best economic choice.
According to the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, the human right to health guarantees the creation of conditions which would assure to all medical service and medical attention in the event of sickness. Do you think the United States protects and promotes health care in that regard as a human right?
Well, there's a big gap. We certainly have taken care of our sickest populations by having Medicare, because that's what Medicare takes care of, the people who are the sickest, the oldest and very disabled. And then we take care of very, very poor people with Medicare and SCHIP. But it's the working and middle class, and now even sort of that, you know, upper middle class, that's the fastest group losing their health insurance now, and so they are rapidly losing health care. And so I think our nation is conflicted because, on one hand, people are worried that if you have so-called free care, somehow everybody will be running to the doctor. I mean, I don't know about you, but there are a lot of procedures that I don't really even want to get, even with my health insurance. I don't think I'm going to go and ask for two colonoscopies. But there's a lot of biases, though. People are not being responsible, and that's why they're sick. And so I think our nation still has a lot of conflicts. The way they did a long time ago, people thought that alcoholism or mental illness was a willpower issue or people just being weak. And now we know that those are real diseases. So I think our nation has to look very carefully at how it is that people are sick, you know, and not blame the victim, if you will, for illnesses that really are just the luck of the draw or because they don't have access to good preventive care.
Could you talk a little bit about the economic and human rights long-term consequences of people not having insurance? Like, can you see, if it continues on the same way that it is right now, what do you see are the outcomes, maybe like in 20 or 40 or 50 years?
Well, right now we have an unsustainable system. I mean, just between 2000 and 2006, health insurance premiums increased by 87%. And they're expecting in 2010 that health insurance premiums will go up another 9%. And then you're also seeing that people have higher copays, higher deductibles. So basically we're headed toward people being sicker, because if you don't have the money, you can't go to the doctor. And so unless you're in an emergency or a crisis, people tend to put it off. And so by the time they get in to the hospital or by the time they get care, they are sicker. So it's more expensive. People are suffering. And it doesn't benefit our nation as a whole for us to be so sick.
Connecting that to economics, how many people face bankruptcy because of health care issues?
Well, in the most recent survey, it turns out that the number has jumped from 50% to 62% of bankruptcies are from medical bills. And the sad, sad, scary thing from that is that 78% of those medical bankruptcies, those are people who had health insurance and then ended up either being too sick so they lost it, or their health insurance was inadequate to cover all of their medical bills. So 78% of those people who went bankrupt for medical bills were originally insured. And so that could be any of us.
In your opinion, do you think physicians and healthcare systems are supporting a single-payer system?
There was a recent survey that was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine in April 2008. And in their survey, 59% of physicians supported a single-payer national health care system. Doctors are sick to death of not being able to actually practice medicine. You know, they're having to argue with health insurance companies. They're having to hire many administrators to just handle all of the bureaucratic mess to try to get the care their patients need and to be reimbursed. So the majority of physicians are ready for a change.
President Obama recently met with the American Medical Association. Did he speak about single-payer systems?
He has not been a supporter of single-payer since he's been elected. As a state senator, he said that single-payer was the best system, and that once we got back the Congress and once we got back the White House, that would be the time to push for single-payer. So I'm not sure where he is in terms of remembering, you know, that commitment, because we now have the Congress and we have the White House, at least the Democrats do, and it's time for single-payer.
And you don't really see him moving in that direction?
We have not seen him move in that direction. He has stated that he is in support of a public option, and that's as close as he has come to a health care reform that would be in competition with the for-profit plans or the status quo.
What is the public option, and how is that different from single-payer?
Well, there are many different versions of this public option, and so there isn't one spelled out structure, if you will, for a public option at this point. The general idea of a public option is that the government would be another payer, and it would be a not-for-profit payer, and that would be another option that people could choose when they want health insurance. And then there are a lot of different variations based on that. So they haven't really spelled out, well, does that mean that they would be reimbursing at Medicare rates, or would people be paying premiums? Would those premiums be subsidized? You know, it's not really clear what this actual public option would be. But even with the sort of best type of public option, it's really not going to control costs like a single payer would. It actually just adds another layer of bureaucracy, and so you don't get any of the savings that we would get if we eliminated the for-profit health plans. And actually, we have had different public option models in many different states: Minnesota, Oregon, Maine, Florida, Utah, Washington, California, Vermont, and Massachusetts. They've all tried a public option as a competitor to for-profit plans. And what has traditionally happened is that the sickest people that the private plans can't make a profit off of end up in that system. It's dependent on public funds, tax dollars, and so you have to raise revenue, but since those are the sickest people, it quickly becomes unsustainable because you can't raise enough money in taxes to fund it, and so it goes bankrupt and they end it. And that would be the fear that single payer advocates have, is that they would try to have this public option, but it doesn't really give us any cost savings, and then you have to raise extra revenue in order to even implement it. And again, you raise money and you don't really get any savings with it. It just adds another layer of bureaucracy, and it will probably become a dumping ground for the people that the for-profit plans don't want, because they can't make any money off of them, and it'll end up being too expensive to continue. So it's really not an incremental step towards single payer.
Where can our listeners go to get more information about single payer and to educate themselves? Because there's a lot of information. It sounds like misinformation.
Right. It makes no sense to have a health insurance tied with employment, as we have seen in this downturn. And no other nation does that. No other industrialized nation has for-profit health plans. So whether they have a single payer or they do sickness funds or they have some variation of this, none of them have for-profit health plans. They spend half as much as we do. They cover everyone. And their medical outcomes, despite what you may hear, their medical outcomes are as good or better than ours, because they can invest all this money up front in prevention.
Dr. Adams, you have a website for your group.
We do. People can go to healthcareforalltexas.org. People can also go to the website for Physicians for National Health Program, which is PNHP.org, National Health Program. And then healthcare-now.org is another single-payer site. And if people want to be very advocacy-oriented, they can go to onesinglepayer.net.
Well, Dr. Adams, we really appreciate your being on the show and talking with us about these issues. We hope to have you back again.
I would hope to come.
Great. Well, it'll happen then.
Thank
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Chapter of Amnesty International meets at 7:30 on the first Wednesday of every month at 2360 Rice Boulevard. We invite you to join us then.
For past episodes of the Human Rights Show,
the staff for today's show is Mary Newsom, Michael Skadden, Amanda Austin, Deborah Adams, Hannah Michelle Pinard, Scott Gamlin, Irina Shandikova, and our intern Priscilla Savalas.
And we are pleased to announce tonight that we have a few.
Studies have shown that this pleasing voice bores a hole between one's ears suitable for filling with just about anything the voice wants you to hear. Fossil fuels are green. Greed is good. The liberal voice is evil, has bad breath, and prefers not to change its underwear. The endless parade of tireless volunteers at KPFT talk funny, look weird, and think too much. Odd attire is worn with disruptive slang, logos, and indiscreet holes. Nothing seems to rid the beloved building of these vile creatures, always looking for new ways to spread the ridiculous message of tolerance, compassion, equality, and justice. KPFTauction.org. Stay away from it. It might give you hope or encourage you to think there are others like you. Saturday evening, July 18th. Don't be seen with the misguided listeners and supporters at the KPFT auction. It's not the natural order of things, really. KPFTauction.org. Donate. Volunteer. Wear a costume. Give the creeps your money.
KPFT Houston.
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana Sot Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM for Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawaz hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy Kissing Scene.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye.
Chúng tôi muốn nói lên sự thật cho dưới lãnh đạo được biết.